Thank you for downloading this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. CFR is an independent national membership organization and nonpartisan research center. For more information, please visit us online at cfr.org.
Good afternoon from New York, and welcome to the Council on Foreign Relations, Religion, and Foreign Policy conference call series. I'm Irina Faskanis, Vice President for the National Program and Outreach here at CFR. Thank you all for joining us. As a reminder, today's call is on the record and the audio will be available on our website, www.cfr.org. We're delighted to have Alexei Malashenko with us today to discuss the relationship between Moscow and the Caucasus. Alexei Malashenko is co-chair of the Carnegie Moscow Center's Religion, Society, and Security Program. Dr. Malashenko has taught at the Higher School of Economics and the Moscow State Institute of International Relations, and has worked as a fellow and senior associate at the Russian Academy of Sciences Institute of Oriental Studies. He serves on the editorial boards of the journal Central Asia and the Caucasus, as well as the newsletter Russia and the Muslim World. He's also a board member of the International Federation for Peace and Conciliation, and the author and editor of 20 books in Russian, English, French, and Arabic. Alexei, thank you very much for joining us today. The tragic events in Boston have turned many people's attention toward Russia, so it would be terrific if you could give us an overview of the history of religious tension between the Caucasus and Moscow, and an update of where things stand now.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation to participate in this program. So just during next 10 minutes, I'll try to depict a general picture of the situation in Caucasus as far as religion is concerned. But first of all, I have to tell that a district, which was organized form in 2009, is its population is around 10 million of people. So 7 of them are Muslims. That's why sometimes we call in Russia this district Muslim district. Then we have to know that practically there is no confrontation. There are no frictions between Orthodoxy and Islam. And the biggest problem, the most important problem that exists in this region, and the problem of the relation between this region and the federal center, I mean Moscow, consists in Islam. Because Islamic problems, the problem of Islam, it emerged, I would say, 25 years ago. And it is one of the most important problems, not for Caucasus itself, but it's a problem for stability in generally for Russian Federation. And of course, it concerns the relations between Moscow and, in generally, some Russian Muslimhood. By the way, the number of Muslims in Russian Federation hesitates between 70 million and 20 million, why we have to mention this difference? That's because of Islamic migration from Central Asia, who is present in Russia, and I think that the number of those who come to Russia from Central Asia, from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, it reached approximately 3 million. It's enough, yeah? But at the moment, let's come back to Islam, to the situation in Caucasian region. Well, what is the main problem? The problem consists in the radicalization of Islam, of Islamic society, in the majority republics of the North Caucasus. And if, for instance, in '90s, we were talking about Islamization of or re-Islamization, because it was a certain reaction against the Soviet atheistic time. At the moment, we have to recognize that the process of additional Islamization, of so-called Shariatization, it exists in the Caucasus, and it creates problems for region and for Moscow. What I mean by saying Shariatizations. It means that the majority maybe of the population of Caucasians, in particular in Chechnya, in Dagestan, in Ingushetia, in another republic, they are appealing to Islam, to Shariat, and they want to reconstruct their society, the space of Caucasus, basing on Islamic tradition, on Caucasian and Islamic tradition. Why? Why we observe this phenomenon? I think it's a certain reaction against negative political course of Moscow. Because federal center, it turned to be that it is unable to solve main economic, social, and political problems. While, as example, unemployment in republics of Dagestan and Chechnya, it hesitates between 30% and 50%. And for young generation, extremely, it's very important. And practically, Moscow is unable to bring a certain solution. Well, besides, of course, a corruption. Besides, don't forget about two Chechen wars. Two Chechen wars, it's unbelievable. So in that situation, majority of the societies in Northern Caucasus, they are in a certain frustration. They are disappointed with Moscow, with official politics. And that's why they attempt to find an alternative in Islam. It's a very big problem. It's a very big deal. Because indeed, when people see that federal law, Russian constitution, doesn't work, of course they turn to Sharia law, to Sharia tradition. And just I justify this position, yes? Besides, there is a problem of so-called two Islams. One Islam is traditional Islam, a traditional Caucasian Islam, which is based on Caucasian ethnic tradition, on Caucasian ethnic culture. And the second Islam, the second version of Islam, is a new version, which emerged after the collapse of the Soviet Union, and which, I would say, is coming from abroad, from Persian Gulf, from Middle East, and there is a competition between clear Islam, between new form of Islam and the traditional Caucasian form of Islam. They are fighting for the society, for the Muslims, and of course they are fighting for their position in republics. They are fighting for mosques. They are fighting for possibility to propagate their ideas. But there is a very important thing. Despite this competition, both Islams and new and old Caucasian, they appeal to the creation of a certain Islamic space because they think that this is the only way to find the final solution to solve all kind of problems, including political, social, and so on. As to Moscow, it seems that Putin and his team, Moscow government, they don't understand the real situation. They don't understand that in Caucasus, in particular in Dagestan and maybe in Chechnya, there is a certain Islamic opposition. As usual, they consider them as a gangster, some criminals, but the situation is much more complicated. And I think, just it's my private opinion, I believe that the situation maybe will deteriorate because the confrontation continues, confrontation between two Islams, confrontation between those who continue to think about the possibility to keep the political space in Caucasus as a secular. Because practically Moscow is unable to solve, to show a normal way of the relations between Caucasus and itself and federal center. That's why, by the way, some Russian experts call Caucasus, the North Caucasus, which is part of Russia, they give to it a notion of foreign abroad, of inner abroad, and imagine the situation when the part of the country is considered as an abroad because of the lack of the common civil values, because of the lack of understanding between regional society and Moscow federal center. So, to my mind, the situation is very poor, very poor. Of course, somebody attempts to find a solution, but as usual, it leads to zero. This situation will continue some years, yes. And not to summarize, but to make a short conclusion. Just it's pity, but I think that destabilization of the region will continue. Radicalization of Islam also it will continue because practically it's very difficult to avoid it. And don't forget, for instance, about Olympic Games, this problem is also vividly discussed. Who knows how Islamic opposition, how Islamic radicals will behave in the time of Olympic Games? What they can do? Don't forget about last bombing in Boston. Immediately, in Moscow, began to think and what kind of terrorist activity we could expect in Sochi, in Olympic Games, during Olympic Games. So well, I could emphasize that the situation in the region, in the Caucasian region, concerning Islam, generally the problem of Islamic radicalism in the region, in Caucasus, is deeply linked to the situation in Russia itself. It's deeply tied to all kind of Russian problems, the problem of Russian Federation. And by the way, I mentioned before Olympic Games. It also shows how important this Caucasian Islamic subject is for Putin, for Russian government, for Moscow.
Great. Thank you very much for that overview. Let's turn it over to the group for questions and comments.
Thank you. At this time, we will open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press the star key followed by the one key on your touchtone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the question queue, press star 2. Again, please press star 1 to ask a live question now. Our first question comes from Charles Jones with LDS Charities.
My question is, what is happening in the Russian Federation at the present time with respect to access by other religions to Russian society in general, other religions that have not previously been known in modern Russia?
Thank you very much for this question. The main religions of the Russian Federation, the religions who belong to the majority of the population, is Orthodoxy. And the moment the leader of Russian Orthodox some religions, in particular the head of Russian Orthodox some church, Patriarch Kirill, they want practically to monopolize spiritual life of Russia. And they want to become a religion number one, and it's a very, very dangerous because Russia is a multi-confessional country. We have, as I told you before, around 20 million of Muslims, yes, and Russian Orthodox some church want to be more closer and closer to state, practically patriarch. And in general, the main ideologists of Russian Orthodoxy, they repeat what Putin says. there are a lot of similarities between official secular ideology and church ideology and Orthodox ideology. For instance, I can mention xenophobia, anti-Westernism. Russian Orthodox Church, they emphasize a lot of times that they don't understand what democracy means. They think about the possibility how to reconstruct some Russia also on the base of Orthodox principles. And it creates a certain danger because I cannot imagine how, for instance, a Russian Orthodox Church and Russian Orthodoxy as a religion could be reformed as it was with Western Christianism. And practically, to my opinion, the ideology of Russian Church is directed against modernization. It's a certain obstacle. It's very important, believe me. And besides what I can add, in Russian Federation, there is a so-called division on traditional religions and non-traditional religions. We have inside Russia, Orthodoxy, Islam, Buddhism, and Judaism. As the rest of the religions, they are called sects. And practically, they have no normal possibility to work. They have no possibility to organize missionaryism. And I repeat once again that Orthodoxy and the rest of so-called traditional religions are very tied to state. Practically, they repeat the same ideas and the same slogans then exist inside Russia's official ideology.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Michael Reynolds with Princeton University.
Yes, hello. Thank you very much, Dr. Malashenko, for your presentation. I wanted to press you a bit on your assessment that one of the main problems in the North Caucasus is that Putin and his team do not understand the real situation. My understanding is, which may be incorrect, but my understanding is that Moscow has effectively granted a good deal of autonomy to the local rulers in the Caucasus, in particular to Kadyrov in Chechnya. And in Dagestan, it's largely the Dagestanis run their own affairs. And it seems to me that in some ways the situation is even worse than you describe, in that the locals, certainly in Dagestan, perhaps Kadyrov as well, they themselves don't really know how to resolve the situation. The best they can do is sort of just hang on. That it's not simply a question of a lack of knowledge in the Kremlin, let's say, but it's a lack of solutions even at the local level.
Thanks a lot for this question. I'm going to Dagestan, to Chechnya, and generally to the North Caucasus, and I have a chance to talk to different people, including the representatives of local political elites, and you are right. You are right because they have no what to do. What to do. First of all, practically, they have to repeat what Moscow is doing itself, yes?
Mm-hmm.
On their level. But at the same time, they see the real situation, and they understand that there is no possibility to find the military solution, as Moscow proposed. They understand very well that those who are in Islamic oppositions, the armed gangster. Indeed, this is an end religion and political and ideological opposition. And in Dagestan, for instance, 3 years ago, they attempt to establish a dialogue between moderate branch of Islamic opposition and those who are loyal to local administration and even to Moscow. It led to nothing. It's pity, but it led to nothing because the position of clergymen, of official clergymen, consists that you are guilty. You have to refuse of your ideas, and you have to share the idea of our Caucasian traditional Islam, and so on. Just I spoke indeed to some spiritual, some leaders and political some leaders. Some of them want not to cooperate, but to continue this some dialogue. Even more, they want to refuse of military methods. But it's very, very difficult. It's very, very difficult because the moment is missed. It has to be done, I think, 10 years ago, maybe. That time it was possible. At the moment, it's extremely, extremely difficult. And don't forget that in Dagestan, practically, at the moment, we have a certain civil war. Every day somebody is killed, is murdered. Every week or every couple of weeks we have explosions. We have terrorist acts. And this abnormal situation became normal. And for Caucasus and for Russia itself, the situation is extremely bad because this is a habit. Oh, okay, we have a civil war in Dagestan. Okay, we'll have total instability, some instability in the region. Let them be. Let it be. Let them go. So you see, I have a chance to talk to Siberia, to Ural, to other different regions of Russia about Caucasian problems. And the answer was very typical. It's your Caucasian Moscow problem, and the rest of Russia. Well, so we want to be independent on all these problems. So indeed, the difference between local Caucasian elite and Moscow elite some consists in that if in Moscow don't understand what we have in Caucasus, in Caucasus, even presidents, they understand, but they can do nothing. And Chechnya, by the way, it's a very, very special case. It's a certain exception, maybe.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kathy Kosman with the U.S. Commission of International Religious Freedom.
Hello, Alexei. Thank you so much for everything you're discussing. I was curious about how the Russian extremism law factors into this whole situation, particularly because, at least to my understanding, even though it discusses extremism in a religious context, among others, violence or advocacy of immediate violence is not a criterion.
Kate, I don't understand it. I don't understand it indeed, because we discussed so many times this law, and practically there is a difference between official position and the position of majority of real experts. And it's a headache. It's a headache, and for those who want to improve the situation, who want to do something, But we can do it, yes? And even more, one remark. After Egypt, after Mohamed Morsi came to power and he became a president, somebody in Caucasus, so-called, well, some radicals, they asked, if it's possible for Egypt, and if you, Putin, and your team, you want to establish normal relation with Cairo, so with Egypt of Muslim brothers, why you refuse to recognize that we here, some cold radicals and even extremists, we have no ability to express our position? Why you refuse us to exist as a political and religious force? This is a problem. I had it from people with whom I met in Dagestan, and even more. It was, I think, in December, one Karadagi, one of the main theologists, Muslim theologist, he came to Mahachkala, the capital of Dagestan, to talk about Islam as a religion of peace and so on. He openly said that practically there is no difference between Muslim brothers and you, because we and Egypt, in Persian Gulf, well, everywhere in Muslim world, and you here in Dagestan, in Mahachkala, you want to establish an Islamic order. and it's normal, yes? And practically, there is no difference between vision of Muslim brothers and your visions, some here in some in Caucasus. Just I think that nobody knows. Maybe some changes in this law will be introduced because some of the situation in the Middle East, because it's impossible to deal with Morsi and to refuse to talk to to Islamic opposition and call them as extremists.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question or comment?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jait Clausen with Brandeis University.
Yes, hello, good afternoon. I would like to continue on the topic that we are just discussing. Al-Qaeda's leaders have long been extremely interested in Chechnya. It was bin Laden's next course after Afghanistan, and Ayman al-Zawahiri ended up in prison in Dagestan for 6 months back in 1997. So we have seen the interest of the jihadist global movement sort of come and go in Chechnya. I was wondering if you could explain what has happened in recent years in terms of the revival of the jihadist movement in the area and why that has been such an issue in recent years.
Just, I didn't understand the end of the same question.
Why in recent years we have seen a return of Islamist extremism as a real force in the area?
That's because of the lack of the solution of political, social, and other problems. Yes, this is the point number one. The point number two, what I'm thinking about, you see the new generation of radical, of Muslim radicalism, of Islamic, some radicals began to act. At the moment, even Khlaponin, Alexander Khlaponin, who is the head of this some district, he recognized that the average age of those who participate in radical activities, they are 18 years old. It's a new generation, because it began well approximately 20 years ago. Yes, now those who began, who started this process, they are approximately 40, 45 years old. Yes. These are some of their sons who come and who continue their activity. They get some. They are under the influence of the situation in Persian Gulf and in Middle East and so on. And they don't believe that secular administration would be on the level of the region, or would it be on the level of Moscow, can do something. Young generation who is not post-Soviet generation, who is non-Soviet generation, believes in the possibility of establishing Islamic alternative, Islamic space. Yes? And practically they have no choice, because they have no choice, and they will continue to fight. And this is, I think, one of the explanations. And don't forget one more thing, one more question. To be radicals, to participate in radical movements, is for them a certain way to demonstrate how strong they are. How can we deal with Moscow, with federal center? And also don't forget that they feel more and more their Islamic identity. They feel that they believe to a huge Islamic movement which exists everywhere, from Nigeria to Indonesia and of course in the Middle East. And they are proud of their members of this movement.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, press star 1 to ask a live question now. Our next question comes from Lauren B. Homer.
Thank you so much. It's been a very interesting discussion. I wanted to ask you about the extent to which you think radicals in Chechnya are intent on eradicating people with other religious points of view. I had recently been in Moscow and met with an official in the Russian Orthodox Church who told me that even their services are being interrupted by broadcast speakers being put near their churches, at which people are threatened that if they don't convert to Islam, they'll be killed. And this is obviously very serious, and I'm just wondering what you know about that. Thank you.
Well, if I understood you correctly, it's a problem of missionarism. Yes, it's a problem of even double missionarism, because Islam in general is propagated in Russia, yes? And at the moment we have several Muslim community composed with Russians. Islamization of some Russians. Maybe at the moment it's not a big deal, but 10 years ago nobody could imagine it. At the moment, and nobody knows, by the way, the reliable information, the reliable figures, but I think it's possible to speak about thousands of Russians who became Muslims. By the way, if he is Russian Muslim, if he's Russian Muslim and he evidently wants to prove to everybody his identity, his Islamic identity, and a lot of his Islamic radicals, and even those who participate in terrorist acts in Dagestan, and not only in Dagestan, but in Russia itself also, they are Russians. However, at the moment, there is a problem of a Christianization of some Muslims who came to Russia to work, gastarbeiters, of migrants from Central Asia, from Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, and so on. It's also a big problem, but I think that attempts of Russian clergymen led to nothing, because it's very difficult to Christianize some Muslims, yes? And we had 2 years ago, it happened, there was a preacher, his name is Sisoyev. Indeed, he openly declared that he Christianized so maybe 17, maybe 20, I forgot, Uzbeks and Tajiks. And he openly said it. Then he was killed. He was killed, they say that he was killed by Islamic radicals, so maybe, but it was that time a big event in Moscow, because it happened in Moscow. So there is a certain, not a competition, but misunderstanding, because when one missionarism is directed, so the second missionarism, of course, it creates a lot of difficulties and a lot of some problems. But anyway, to my mind, I think that we have to pay attention. We have to pay attention to the phenomenon of Islamization of Russians. Just even I don't talk at the moment about so-called Muslim wives, about some Russian women who married some Muslims. I speak about men.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Thomas Yusup with Friends of UN.
Hi. Thank you for that excellent overview. I had a question about the economic development of Chechnya. A few weeks ago, I happened to see an old movie called Prisoner of the Month.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for this question because it's very provocative. Before I mentioned Shariatization and re-Islamization of the North Caucasus, yes? But who are leaders of this Islamization process? Rather, these are clergymen, imams, mufti, and so on. In Chechnya, the initiative of Islamization belongs to Ramzan Kadyrov, a secular president of Chechnya, by the way, a friend of Putin. It's very interesting. It's very interesting because after two Chechen wars, well, it wasn't so simple to talk about Islam in Chechnya, about different forms of Islam. And Ramzan Kadyrov, what did he do? He began to transform mosques in a so-called social and political centers. He openly said and repeated so many times that Chechnya must become a Muslim territory. And he spoke so much that it's necessary to use Sharia law. Practically, the relations in families, I mean, the relations between men and women are regulated by Sharia law. There is an Islamic address code. The Chechen TV is full of religious program. By the way, it could be compared with TV of Iran. Practically, because I have a chance to watch different Chechen channels, every day, every hour, you can hear something about Islam. Practically, Ramzan Kadyrov indeed transformed Chechnya in a Muslim territory. Just I don't want to tell is it bad or is it good, but don't forget that we live in secular Russia, yes? And what is one of the problems of such some Ramzan course? There is a conflict between generation because, well, the old men or men who aged, well, 50 years old, 60 years old, and more who was born in the Soviet Union and who were before rather indifferent to Islam and to religion. And their sons, this is a two different type of men. It's a two different generations. Because if, for instance, the old men, old generation, continue to be, I would say, indifferent, more or less, but indifferent, even to Islam, because they received a Soviet education and so on. Young generation, indeed, I don't want to say that they are fanatics, but they so turned to Islam, to Islamic tradition. And it's very easy to see when you come to Chechnya. Well, even on the private level, even in the behavior between old men and the young generation. So it is a gap. It is a split. And just, I don't insist in my opinion, but it seems that even young generation, some who are aged 30 years old or 40 years old, a little bit they become tired of Islam. And when they come, for instance, to Russia, to Moscow, to other Russian city, well, just practically there is no difference in their behavior between Russians and themselves.
So I was asking about economic development. I understand that unemployment in this area is anywhere from 50 to 85%. And isn't that one reason why people would turn to religion, because they have nothing else to do?
Well, there is such opinion because, and it was written in a lot of articles, when you have nothing to do, you will turn to Islam. just I don't want to exaggerate, but when you are jobless for years, indeed you will think about so what to do, and so what about a normal a solution on your situation? If it's impossible to do some basing on official political course, if it's impossible to get rid of jobless so with the assistance of Moscow, if it's impossible to do in the soul among the soul, and if even local elites some can help you, indeed you will search something else, and maybe in this case Islamic alternative is a certain issue. And of course, if you aren't occupied all the day, so where you will go? You will go to mosque, because practically in Caucasus there is a lack of infrastructure, like a sport, like some cultural institution. So the mosque in that case began a certain place of communication.
Thank you. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Shaikh Ubaid with the Muslim Peace Coalition.
Thank you for this opportunity. You have mentioned two important factors. One of them, the so-called radicalization, and the other one, the brutal suppression by Russia of Chechen national aspirations. But isn't it wrong to focus so much on Islamization, whereas from Imam Mansur in 1790s to Imam Shamil in 1850s, when there was no Wahhabis or no radicalization, Chechens wanted to be independent. And the first president, Zhojar, and then also Aslan, after that Maskadev, they were nationalists, and they wanted to have Chechnya free. And the second thing is, you have not focused on the racism that is shown by the Russian community at large for people who have migrated to Moscow and Russia. And that breeds resentment in the Muslims of Central Asia as well as Caucasus.
Well, that's a long question. So what about Shamil and Mansur? Mansur, who was a leader, who was very prominent in Chechnya, he has no relation to Dagestan. Indeed, they write a lot and they talk about Mansur in Grozny, and for Ramzan Kadyrov, he's one of the key leaders who fought for independence. And a lot of books, a lot of articles, indeed, are dedicated to Mansur. But however, it seems that that Mansur belongs to the past. To the past, because at the moment, Ramzan Kadyrov tries to develop a new type of Islamic ideology. Sheikh Shamil, it's a key person for Dagestan history. There are monuments to Shamil and so on. There are books about Shamil, but I've never had from young generation of Muslims in Dagestan that they continue to develop ideas and of Shamil. And I think that both and Shamil and Mansur, it's a past, it's a history. But by the way, I remember the time of Chechen wars and the first war and the second Chechen war. So that time, indeed, Mansur, so once again his memory then was restored, and that time in the 90s, Sheikh Mansur was very very popular in Chechnya, as well, by the way, in the same time of as it was Shamil in Dagestan. Oh, excuse me, I forgot the second part of your question.
The current racism that is exhibited by the Russian society, it's alienating more and more youth. And to put everybody in the same category, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood who believes in democracy and the Salafis who do not believe in democracy will be a big folly.
Well, it's not so easy to answer your question because just I don't know if majority of Russian population, of some Russian, some themselves, believe in democracy, because the idea of democracy was totally compromised. So it's not a problem for Muslim Brothers, for Salafi. I think in Russian Federation it's a general problem. And as to me, I think that if indeed it was possible to establish a normal democratic some system in Russia itself, and including her Caucasus, I wouldn't be astonished if, for instance, somebody, some organizations, some like to Muslim Brothers, will come to power in Dagestan. It's possible, because I don't believe when they say that Islam denies democracy. No, for Islam, to my mind, democracy is a tool. For Islamic radicals, like Muslim Brothers, it's a possible tool to come to power, and it's normal. Look, at the moment we have a democratic state in Egypt, but who is on the head? So it's normal. But in general, the problem of democracy in Russian Federation is an extremely difficult problem.
Thank you. Any last question?
Thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, press star 1 to ask a live question now.
Alexei, we're close to the end of the time. If you look out 5 to 10 years from now, are you optimistic or pessimistic about how the relationship between Moscow and the Caucasus will look?
I'm pessimistic not because I'm Russia and I read a lot of books of Dostoevsky and Tolstoy, who were some very pessimistic. I'm pessimistic because Caucasus is a part of Russian Federation. And in Russian Federation itself, we have so many problems. We encounter so many difficulties. We talk a lot about modernization, but we get nothing. Sometimes even Putin, he talks about democracy, but it means nothing. So I don't believe that we can solve the problem of Caucasus without giving a normal, positive solution to general problems of Russian state. Just after the collapse of the Soviet Union, the expectations, the positive expectations were very, very high. At the moment, there is a frustration and disappointment in Russian Federation, and a frustration in Caucasus, which took the form of Islam, of searching for Islamic alternative, is a part of a general Russian situation.
Thank you. Any last thoughts before we close up?
No.
From you? Well, thank you very much for this wonderful conversation. We really appreciate your sharing your valuable insights with us today and for taking the time to do this.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed.
As you know, this conference call series is part of CFR's Religion and Foreign Policy Initiative, which seeks to connect religious and congregational leaders and scholars from across the country in conversations on a broad range of pressing international issues. If you have any feedback or would like to email us with any suggestions on topics you would like to see covered, please email us at outreach@cfr.org. Our next conference call will take place on Monday, May 20th at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, and will feature our CFR President Richard Haass on Foreign Policy Begins at Home, the case for putting America's house in order. The topic is focused on his book on this subject. So So I hope you will join us for that. We will be sending the invitation shortly. So thank you all again, and thank you, Alexei.
Thank you very much once again.
Thank you for listening to this Council on Foreign Relations podcast. For additional audio, video, and transcripts of CFR meetings, as well as expert analysis of international news, please visit us online, cfr.org.